Welcome to Relation Fix, the podcast dedicated to creating healthy, happy, and passionate connections with our loved ones. I'm Shayna Dubay, your host. Let's dive in. Hey everyone, welcome back to Relation Fix. I'm so glad you could join us today. Today is going to be a really interesting topic. I know I say that every time, but I really think they are. Some days the topics for this show come to me easily and readily, but I often have to do some searching for inspiration. And today was really one of those days. I was doing some tandem work with Frank at Barnes & Noble, and the topic of this week's episode was totally eluding me. And Frank suggested that I look on Reddit for some ideas. Now, I had never been on Reddit before, outside of a Hogwarts house quiz that I took a few months back, solidly landing me in Hufflepuff House. Thank you very much. And I was delighted to find quite a lot of discussions about relationships on there. And I saw this post that asked this question: what often destroys relationships but isn't talked about much? And there's one answer that really caught my eye, and it was this: blame. The single best predictor of relationship failure is the frequency of blaming language. Blame is absolutely poisonous to relationships. Approach problems from a problem-solving mindset, not a blame-assigning one, if you want your relationship to last. So I thought that it would be interesting to bring my partner Melissa back on this episode, because this has actually been a pretty intense conversation, discussion in our household lately. So welcome, Melissa.
Thank you, Shayna. It's nice to be here.
Thank you so much for coming back. I know you've been on a couple of other episodes that have been very interesting as well. We talked about gender and sexuality. We also did a work episode,
yes,
which were really fun.
They were a lot of fun.
So in the past few weeks, my daughter has really gone through one of those phases. Parents out there, I think you're going to recognize this one, which is blaming everyone, particularly me, for the problems in her life. She's constantly saying, it's your fault. And it comes out of her mouth like every single day. And Melissa and I have had many conversations about this, kind of why she's doing it, what's happening, why are we blaming?
What need does it meet?
Yeah, what needs do they meet? Why would that even be something that you would do? And so when I saw this post, I thought, this is it. This is the thing to talk about. It's so relevant to what is happening in our lives, but I also think it's pretty relevant to relationships in general. So let's talk about the blame game. I wanted to look at the difference between blame and accountability and how they affect our relationships. Remember to review, like, comment, and share these episodes with other people. Please follow the podcast and share it with the people that you think would really benefit from it. We want to make sure that you know the new bonus episodes that are coming out, as well as our all new content this season. So please jump on Podbean or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Google Podcasts, and just follow us and let us know how we're doing. Blame is a really interesting topic because I think it's something that runs a lot of our lives. Blame is often defined as assigning responsibility to someone or something, but I think we all feel that blame and responsibility and accountability are a little bit different than each other. They have like a similar concept, but the feeling is definitely different, no?
Yeah, we've talked about that a bit, the difference between blame and accountability. I was doing something in the house and the topic of blame had come up, and I told you that I didn't believe in blame. And you said, I'm not blaming you. I'm making you accountable for your behavior.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to hear that in the moment.
Well, because blame is a lot about finding fault with someone. There's a lot of negativity and reproach in that. And blaming someone feels kind of inherently negative. And I think it kind of breaks down relationships.
It does. It makes you really defensive.
Yeah, it oftentimes comes up with defensiveness. And, you know, in the episodes that I did with Frank on how to fight right, part one and part two, you know, part one, we talked about defensiveness and personalization, which blame is often wrapped up in there, certainly. But I think we all kind of feel like blame is emotional And it can be very disrespectful and discredits the person that's being blamed. It's like I'm wagging my finger at you.
It's hard to differentiate between blame and accountability. So, you know, when you're called out on something, if you look at it like blame, it can be very negative, and I tend to do that. But when you point out that it's you're not blaming me, you're holding me accountable to something, then it doesn't feel like such a negative connotation. It feels like a discussion.
Yeah, healthy. Definitely. And yeah. I think that our interpretation of what the other person is saying certainly has an impact on how it feels when we're mm-hmm. talking about not holding up our ends of the bargain. But accountability is more like holding yourself or someone else accountable or responsible for keeping their agreements or fulfilling their piece of something and allowing you to own up to your mistakes. Mm-hmm. It also, in that space though, has room for respect and kindness, yeah. compassion. Accountability allows us to not only rectify our wrongdoings, but also to really learn and grow. Blame doesn't have that.
No, it doesn't. And I think if you have like a healthy relationship, you can say this is accountability and not blame. I know sometimes when I irritate you to the nth degree, you'll, which happens probably more frequently than I wish, you'll say, can you please have generous assumptions of me? You know, as I'm like, you're blaming me, and you're like, no, I'm not. I'm coming from a loving spot.
Yeah.
I'm holding you accountable. Can you please yes. have generous assumptions of me?
Well, I think in the vein of holding myself accountable, that sometimes the way that I come across mm-hmm. doesn't sound like I'm holding you accountable with kindness and grace. Sometimes it kind of comes across like I am blaming. And so I think it's really interesting because as a little tangent, in processing some of our communication styles, one of the things that I've recognized about myself is that because I'm an intense individual, that my level of intensity of what I feel internally is not always at the same level that people outside of me think it is. So, for example, I might feel like I'm at a level 5 of intensity, but other people read me at an 8.
Yeah.
And so I'm always surprised when people are like, oh, what do you mean? You're not super angry right now? And I'm like, no, I'm only at like a 4 or 5.
At which time I usually say, God, I don't want to see a 10.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not a big fan of 10 either. I've only been there a few times in my life. And let me tell you, it is not a fun place.
It's scary.
Yeah. Yes. And so I think what ends up happening is sometimes it can be hard to tell the difference between accountability and blame.
Yes.
And we're not always, especially in like intimate relationships, we're not always our best self, or if we're stressed out or overwhelmed or whatever, our tongues can be sharper than we wanted yes. them to be.
For better, for worse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I also think that one of the things that we face that is really hard in our society right now is shame culture. And we just have this idea that we should be punished. Other people should be punished for wrongdoings. And it's so pervasive that it actually makes it pretty near impossible to have a culture of accountability, I think, because it's very difficult for someone to take responsibility and accountability for their mistakes or their behavior and like grow and change if they are vilified or punished or like cancel culture, the idea that like if you make a mistake, you can't grow from it. Now, obviously, there are some things that require consequences. Obviously, actions that cause harm to other people, there has to be consequences for it. Yes. But punishment and consequences are not always the same thing. Ooh, that would be an interesting episode too. We might have to think about that.
Shut it down.
Right? The difference between consequences and punishment. Certainly. So one of the things that we often can see in this space, especially this year because it's an election year, is the political world. And we look at blame mm-hmm. and responsibility and accountability. It's very common in the political world for people not to take accountability for their actions. You don't see anybody saying, hey, yes, I did vote for X, Y, and Z thing, but I believed it to be the best option. Now I don't. That they're looked at as like wishy-washy. So mm-hmm. there's no space for accountability, and it's just finger pointing.
It is. And this not running the government, it tends to be so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that. And I think it's really easy to look at what's right and wrong and not talk about the government.
Yeah. Like, I'm not responsible for the thing that happened. This bad thing happened, but it didn't have anything to do with me. It's this other person's fault. And that makes it really tough sometimes, I think, to trust anyone in the political world.
Yes.
So we do see it on an individual level in our relationships, mm-hmm. but we also see it in our society in the grander scheme of things. I also think, too, if we look at the criminal justice world and think about who has to be held accountable and take responsibility for their actions, and oftentimes it's very disproportionately against people of color, the BIPOC community, Latinx community. And it's really distressing when you look at how accountability happens in our society and who is held accountable, and not even just held accountable, but punished even to a higher level, mm-hmm. who gets out of the repercussions for their actions. And so one of the things we talk about a lot is, you know, one of the candidates running for president right now, who neither of us are a big fan of, how he is often charged with things and has really bad behavior, but there's a large group of people that do not believe he needs to be held responsible for his actions. And that's really hard. And it makes it seem as if we shouldn't have to be responsible for the things that we do in life. Melissa, I know that you've been in the mental health profession for a long time and probably treated many people who had some blaming ideas, blame avoidance, and, you know, accountability issues. Is there any examples of that that come to your mind?
Yes, there is an example. I worked in a jail for a while, very different from working in a hospital.
And yes.
I was talking to a fellow who was in jail doing a three-month bid for domestic abuse. And in order to be jailed for domestic abuse, you had to walk through many restraining orders. And so I was meeting with him. He was getting ready to be released from jail. And I was talking about the domestic abuse and understanding, you know, why he was incarcerated. And he said he was incarcerated because his wife called the police and had him arrested. And he couldn't see any of his part in his arrest or being in jail or going through restraining orders. And he said to me what he was going to do different when he got home was, well, actually it's not all that different. He was going to call out his wife on having him arrested. And I just discovered in jail, you really can't do therapy with people that are blame avoidant.
So he basically was like, I didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
And what, in your experience, where does that come from? Where does that type of blame avoidance come from?
I think when young kids, and especially him, are told they can't do anything right, you can't do anything right, you're always to blame, it's always your fault. I think at a young enough age, a child becomes narcissistic or blame avoidant, like they can't do anything wrong. And for him, getting in a relationship and being told that he was doing something wrong was something his psyche just couldn't tolerate.
So in a way, it feels like it almost flips, right? So you mm-hmm. go from, I can't do anything right from mm-hmm. your parent, to almost like a coping skill is like, now I can't do anything wrong. Like, that's how you cope with it, is by giving yourself like an overinflated sense of ego, which actually stems from mm-hmm. a high level of insecurity and probably deep shame, I would assume.
Deep shame and blame, being blamed. And if it goes to the nth degree, you're looking at like a narcissistic personality disorder. And somebody who's a narcissist tends to surround themselves with people that can ingratiate them. And when there's a disagreement with a person who's narcissistic, they get kicked out of the circle. And somebody else will come in that over-idealizes them and believes that they can do nothing wrong. You see that again in our political system today.
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. And so you can see how blame would be very enticing for someone like that, because mm-hmm. not only is it a way to discharge some of their pain and suffering, but it also matches up with the idea of the identity of who they've become. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so when we think about something like discharging pain and suffering with blame, that's a really good way of kind of getting your pain out of you. So if you're super overwhelmed or scared or in pain, then you could take that feeling and sort of release some of the pressure by mm-hmm. dumping it on. You're responsible for my lot in life. So if you think about that guy, he's like, this isn't something that I did. I didn't do this. I was forced to come here because she did this. It's her fault.
Yes.
She's responsible for my pain. And in fact, when I get home, I'm gonna tell her that she's responsible. And if he is a person who, you know, is takes part in domestic violence, I'm guessing that that could potentially have something to do with some sort of physical abuse, if not mm-hmm. verbal, emotional, mental mm-hmm. type abuse, yeah. I would assume.
And then reincarceration.
Yes. And so the recidivism is very high because punishment doesn't really work, especially around things like this. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if he went through multiple restraining orders, then clearly that doesn't matter all that much to him.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a sense also of if I can go back to that person after I'm released, trying to get the person to say that you didn't do anything wrong. So it's like going yes. back to the person saying, I didn't do anything wrong, right? Right.
So you're getting that validation that you, in fact, were the just the victim of
yes
of their meanness or mm-hmm. whatever attack they were putting on you.
Yes.
Yes. It's so interesting because when we think about this, Evie kind of does this a little bit. We started this conversation talking about blame coming up as a big part in what's kind of happening in our household at this time.
Yes.
And so I think Evie does that a lot as a way to discharge her overwhelm and her pain because, you know, she has ADHD and there's a lot of positives to it. I also have it. But one of the challenges with ADHD is that you tend to be like a little bit of a tornado. Mm-hmm. And I'm not any different. If you could see my desk, you would agree.
I do agree.
But I think that that happens a lot when I'm asking her to like pick up her stuff or to try to organize things or get things ready for the next day, have some sort of structure. And it feels very overwhelming for her because her brain doesn't function all that well on that path. And I'm considerably older than her. And whereas it's not that good, there are some things that I have learned over time to be better at. And so when she gets really overwhelmed, it's easier for her to point her finger at me and say, well, it's your fault you bought me this stuff or daddy bought me this stuff or you don't have the bins or you didn't tell me I had to pick it up or whatever. There's this blaming language that happens where she doesn't want to have to say, yes, I didn't pick it up or the dog chewed up my toy because I left it unattended. It was always, well, you didn't tell me I should pick it up or it wasn't my fault. The dog saw it. There's this lack of willingness to look at your own piece. And I think it has to do with shame. You know, she has this feeling of, I don't have the ability to be organized and structured in a way that will help me protect my things. So if I can't do that, then it must mean there's something wrong with me. So instead of me thinking there's something wrong with me, I'm just going to blame another person. Now she's 9 too. So, mm-hmm. you know, she doesn't have a fully developed brain in that way yet. So this is some of her coping skills that she's learned and how to deal with that overwhelm. I think one of the things that we sort of touched on a little bit too with your story was the idea that blame is really enticing for moving into a victim mentality.
Yeah.
And why would anyone want to be a victim? You know, I mean, that's definitely something that I think we think about all the time. But I think being a victim is very enticing.
It is.
In a lot of ways.
And you and I have talked a lot about how you create the environment that's most familiar to you.
Yes. We all have like environments and emotional states mm-hmm. that we're most comfortable in. And it doesn't mean that that state is actually comfortable, but I think it's a piece familiar. Of certainty because it's familiar. Exactly. It's familiar.
Yeah.
So we know how to manage ourselves in that state. And so when you're a victim.
Growing up, if you're
yeah,
made a victim.
Well, I think a lot of times that happens because initially you might have been. And as a kid, you often have very little control over what happens in your life. You often are a victim. You often do have, you know, sometimes people have abuse or neglect or things like that. And those things do make you a victim, or they actually don't make you a victim. Dr. Edith Eger, and she went through the Holocaust, and her whole family died in the Holocaust, except I think she has a sister who made it out with her, but her and her sister, the rest of her parents died. And it was obviously very traumatic. Mm-hmm. And what she says is, I'm not a victim. I was victimized, which I think is really important to think about. When you're a victim, it's enticing because you're not responsible for what has happened to you or for your life or your bad decisions. I'm not responsible for any of that. But when you give up that responsibility and allow someone else's actions to control your life, you actually give up all your power too. So that means that this other person controls your destiny forever, which if you think about it that way, that's kind of terrible. Do you know what I mean? This person who did this bad thing to me, now I am chained to this person for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And my life will never be better. And I have no choice but to stay in this lane because this other person did this thing to me, which is really distressing. So in some ways, like even just to harken back to you know, the guy in prison, is like, I'm assuming some really negative things happened to him as a kid. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, none of this is my responsibility. This is my wife's responsibility. This is the person who abused me's responsibility. Not realizing that there's a point at which you are now making your own choices, your own decisions. And then over time, if you do this enough, it then kind of becomes your identity.
Yeah. Yes. And like you said, there's some comfort in things not being your responsibility.
Oh, absolutely.
And in being a victim.
Yeah, it's a part of certainty. We did an episode, Frank and I did one, on the 6 human needs. Mm-hmm. And certainty and significance are the things that push the vast majority of us. That's our drivers for our behavior most of the time. And when you think about something as my identity, that is all about certainty. I need to know who I am. And you know how much I love Tony Robbins.
Yes.
As does everyone who listens to the podcast on a regular basis.
Yes.
And I probably said this quote before, but it's so good. And it's probably my favorite quote by him. And it says, the most powerful force in the human personality is the need to consistently define ourselves. So the idea is that I need to continue to think of myself as the same person consistently. And if who I believe I am is unlovable or unhappy, or in my case, too sensitive and too much, or I'm not good enough in some way, or I'm a victim, whatever, mm-hmm. fill in the blank, that identity becomes the thing that we have to consistently support. But we don't get taught that our identities are actually our decisions. We have this sort of what I like to call our reactive identity, which is it's just sort of a culmination of our experiences that we create this identity of who we believe we are. And then we live our lives in that direction. But we don't have to stay that person. If you had a really negative experience in your life or you went through a lot of abuse, you don't have to stay with the idea or the core beliefs that you are unlovable or that you're not enough. You have the ability to change those things and thus create a new identity for yourself.
I don't think everybody that, for example, may feel comfortable being a victim actually understand what they're doing.
No, I don't think so at all.
And I think that's probably a big piece for, I don't know, what we say in psychiatry is, you know, after the age of 18, you keep what you want and the rest you take to therapy.
Absolutely.
I think when you get to the therapy part, you start to figure out how you view the world, whether it be a victim or
absolutely.
Not.
I think part of becoming an adult is attempting to figure out what you want to be moving forward. Like we think about that so much in terms of like careers, mm-hmm. right? What do you want to be? And we think about that as like, oh, I want to be a doctor, or I want to be a nurse, or I want to be, you know, a writer. But we never ask ourselves, like, what do I want to be as like a person?
How do I want to view myself?
Yeah. What do I want my personality to be? What do I want my view on life to be? What do I want my core beliefs to be? Mm-hmm. But we're so wrapped up in this idea that the identity that we have is who we are, that that's the truth of who we are, not a construct that has been created as a result of our interpretation of our experiences, and that actually we can choose anything we want. Because, and my clients hate when I say this, but I say, like, it's like 99% made up. Life is like 99% made up. It's because what we think about ourselves and other people and the future and the world is made up in our head. Almost all of it is just made up. And so we could just make up a better story for ourselves.
Yes.
But if you feel like you have to be that same person that is not enough, is full of shame, is a victim, that's become your identity, then you can't hold yourself accountable and learn and grow. You have to blame other people.
Yes.
It's really tough. I have a cousin who went through a good amount of trauma as a younger adolescent. And, you know, she went through a lot of problems with her father, who was very mentally, verbally, and physically aggressive and abusive towards her. And she took so much of that in, and it informed her self-worth as being worthless and unlovable in so many ways that she continued to make decisions to be with men who sort of perpetuated that abuse as an adult, and do really risky things and use substances and things like that to try to push out that pain. She still carries it to this day, even though it's been many years since the abuse happened. And she still continues to look for validation from her family, from her friends, that this was her experience. And so what she fails to recognize sometimes is that, you know, she's actually responsible now. What happened to her when she was a kid was not her fault.
No, it wasn't.
It was not her fault. That was something that happened to her. But now the decisions that she's made, that's her responsibility now. And she doesn't need any validation from anyone else. If she's waiting for them to say, you're absolutely right, this happened, then she could be waiting forever. And meanwhile, her life is going by, but she's now actually making decisions that are mm-hmm. not great for her. And there's no one else making that, but she has trouble seeing it. So at this point, I think we have a pretty good idea as to why someone might blame, why we might be enticed into doing it. But let's say you want to grow and move out of the blame game. I think one of the first things that we can do is actually something that you talked about a little bit earlier, which was being generous with your assumptions of others.
Yeah.
So what does that mean to you, being generous with your assumptions?
I think sometimes the way you say things to me, I take it as criticism, but for you, it's not a criticism. And I'll get upset and you'll just say, this is how I meant that. Can you be generous with your assumptions about me?
And yeah.
Do you think I would intentionally ever hurt you? No. Be generous with your
maybe.
Be generous yeah. with your assumptions.
I think
it's like you make me out to be an ogre.
Yeah, I think it's a big part of building trust.
Yeah,
is being generous with your assumptions of the other person, mm-hmm. especially if you've decided that you love this person. If you're in relationship with this person, whether it be an intimate relationship or a friendship, if this is somebody that you believe that you want to spend time with, that you want to dedicate part of your life to, then be generous with your assumptions of them, that they're not intentionally trying to hurt you, or that even if they said something that was critical or off the cuff, that you have this idea that my assumption of that person is they must not be feeling good today, or maybe they're having a hard time, or something's going on in their life.
Versus you're picking at me, you're having a bad day and you're taking out on me, those type of things. It'd just be so much easier just to say, how are you feeling?
Yes. Now, some people might say, well, then you're just excusing away people's bad behavior, which I get, mm-hmm. right? But I think that the difference for me is, you know, another part of moving out of blame is calling out people's behavior, but not their intention. So that kind of goes hand in hand with generous with your assumptions of others, because when you're looking at someone's behavior, especially if you've decided that you love this person, then you want to say their intention is never to hurt me. They're just hurting. They're having a hard time. And here's the thing. You can call out the behavior, just not the intention, right? So that's how you address bad behavior and set a boundary. So if I'm generous with my assumptions of you, if you come in and you lose your temper with me, or you barb me or say something that hurts me, I might get reactive to that and want to like barb back at you.
Yeah.
But I think if I can say, okay, what's going on in her life today that might have made her more likely to barb at me? So I know, like, okay, she had a doctor's appointment. I know she has to go to work today. There was an issue with someone she was working with, and she had a difficult conversation with her mother. Like, maybe these things have lowered her threshold of being able to be her best self with me right now. So that's where I get to say, okay, but that doesn't mean that I just let you say or do whatever you want. But that's where I get to say to you, hey, I know that, you know, you've had a few stressful things happening. Are you okay? Because you're kind of coming at me harder than I know you would typically do. I know your intention is not to hurt me, but like, is something going on? Is something wrong? And so it gives you an opportunity to say to that other person, I'm assuming that you would never hurt me.
Yes.
I know that your intention is not to hurt me because we love each other. So why would you do this? Right? Rather than saying, why would you come at me like this? Why are you always say things that are hurtful? You're always so critical of me. You're so mean. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, that's that blaming language where I've taken what you've said personally and now I'm barbing back at you in a defensive manner. But instead, if I get to say, okay, I know she's going through some stressful stuff, like, let me ask if she's okay. And then point out that when you do this kind of thing to me, when you say things like that to me, I know your intention isn't to hurt me, but it does hurt.
Yes.
Then I've gotten to say that the thing that you're doing is not good for me, but I'm also being generous with my assumption and I'm not questioning your intention. I'm just calling out the behavior.
Yes.
Yes. And so that's better than blaming. And that for me is accountability, isn't it?
Yeah, it is accountability. I don't always want to hear, anything that's terribly healthy when something like that's going on. But yes, I do agree with that. Yeah. Or you might tell me that maybe I need to take some space.
I definitely think timing matters too.
Yes.
You know, sometimes people just aren't in a space to have that kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. And so it might have to hold off. It's okay to say space, you know, or need some space. In fact, I put up a couple post-it notes around the house that say, I'm having a hard time. I need some space. Thank you. Until I calm down or whatever.
It's on bright pink memo.
Post-its, yeah.
and when our friends come over, I'm like, oh.
But like, I literally like...
They're posted in a couple places.
Yeah. And sometimes I can be so reactive that I don't really trust the things that are going to come out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to like point to the paper and she'll be like, okay, I know to like give her a minute. Because there's times where you just can't process something else. And if you have the ability to say that to someone too, like, I care about how you feel, but I'm just not in a place I can talk about it right now. And if you can abide by that and do that kind of thing, that's really helpful with communication. And it helps move you out of that blaming space, that blaming language, certainly.
Some of the post-its are missing now.
I think they just fell off.
No.
Oh, you pulled them down?
I pulled a couple of them off, yes.
Oh. Well, I think
I think we were having company over and I'm like, oh, I don't want people to know my dirty laundry.
Oh, I think there was only two to begin with, one in the kitchen, one in the living room. So, yeah. Oh, I thought it just fell off. Isn't that funny?
I should have left it that way.
Oh, that's okay. Another thing that I like to do when I'm feeling emotional or disturbed, or could we say triggered? The very overused term, but sometimes you are triggered. When I'm feeling that way, I really like to stop, if I can, stop and take some time to ask myself, what part of me is being bothered? What part of me is upset about this right now? Is there an experience that I've had in the past that this is pushing into, that this is coming from?
when was the first time I felt this type of feeling? And I think that gives me an opportunity to step out of focusing on what the other person is doing wrong and asking myself, why is this disturbing me? Because mm-hmm. that's my space. That's my space to learn and grow. If I'm disturbed by something that's happening outside of me, then the disturbance is internal. That's my mm-hmm. work. That's my job. I can, like we just said, like I can come to you and call out your behavior, but that internalized work of what is the thing that was disturbed to begin with, mm-hmm. that's sometimes a piece that we're missing a lot. You know, we focus on what the other person needs to do, but sometimes we have to say like, why does this thing make me feel so reactive?
Yeah, I've heard you use this phrase a lot about being responsive and not responsible.
Yeah.
So it's really easy if somebody's coming at you with blame to be responsive, but understand you're not responsible for whatever's going on with that other person. There's no blame. There's no blame in it.
Blame. I do think, however, that it is important to recognize that our actions do impact other people.
Yes, they do.
So it is important to be responsive, but in the world of like personalization, where I'm making everything about me.
Yeah.
And that really shuts down communication too.
Yeah.
When you now make it about you instead of being there in that open space for the person who's hurting.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that's really interesting is the idea of switching from blame to accountability. And so we kind of described what mm-hmm. blame and accountability were. But when I think about how do I switch from that, when I think about blame, it's about me. And what I mean by that is I'm in pain. I feel bad. I'm focused on my own pain and suffering. When I'm in accountability, I'm focusing on the other person. I'm focusing on our relationship together. I'm focusing on kindness and compassion, contribution and love. That's where my focus is. And I think the reason why that switch happens is because when I'm blaming someone else, I'm 100% focused on my own overwhelm, on my own pain, on my own suffering. And I'm very focused on significance and certainty. Those two needs are the things that are driving me. But if I can switch to love and contribution, that allows me to move into a space of accountability by saying, this thing that you did was not okay with me. And I know that your intention wasn't to hurt me, but it does hurt when this happens. And so if you love me and I love you, like maybe we can do things that don't hurt each other. We get to look at boundaries. We get to look at compassion. We get to look at why someone would do something like that. You know, what's going on in their life. But you can't be in that space if you're thinking about yourself.
I had never thought of it in that way. It's causing me to have a very thoughtful moment.
If only you could see it. She has thoughtful moments and she's our resident introvert amongst a house of extroverts.
Oh, it's the nth degree.
So there's a lot of internalized processing that happens, I think. And the last thing that I think is really important around blame and accountability is holding ourselves accountable for our piece of things. Now, that does not mean that we should hold ourselves accountable for other people's mistakes, mm-hmm. like unjustified accountability, that we don't need that. But in relationships, there's two people, sometimes more than two. But if we're talking about intimate relationships, you have two people and we each have a place.
Yes.
So it's okay to take a second and say, you know what? I'm really sorry that I was so reactive to that. I want you to know that I apologize if I said anything that hurt you mm-hmm. because it wasn't my intention. And if you come to me and you yell at me and I get reactive back at you, mm-hmm. I have the responsibility of my own response.
Oh.
That's my accountability. That's my space right there.
That's profound.
I'm not responsible for what you did to me. That's what you hold yourself accountable for, hopefully. But I can hold myself accountable for my reactiveness in that moment. And I can hold you accountable by saying, I just want you to know that when you talk to me that way, or when you barb at me, it like hits the soft spots in me and it makes it really hard for me to maintain my kindness and compassion. Like I feel really reactive. Mm-hmm. And so I'm responsible for my own reactivity, but I can also hold you accountable for it as well, for your reactivity to me.
Yes.
So I think it's really interesting, this idea about blame and how it holds space in our lives in so many ways. I think I feel like I kind of learned a little something from this conversation.
I have too.
Yeah.
You've said a few profound things.
Yeah. And I think one of the beautiful pieces of doing these types of a little bit more impromptu recordings with each other is that we kind of get to see our own growth and our mm-hmm. own space in there. Mm-hmm. So I just want to thank you mm-hmm. for being willing to come on the show again and share, you know, your experiences and your expertise in not only being a partner, but also a mental health professional. And I really appreciate your input.
I really appreciate your staying open to conversations. I feel like we had conversations like in the last hour that opened my mind up to a lot of stuff that goes on in our house.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And hopefully we can take some of this back to Miss Evelyn and other relationships and maybe even to clients and things like that.
Absolutely.
But the change always starts within ourselves.
It does.
Definitely. So thank you once again for listening. I'm so glad that you were able to be here with us. We hope you really enjoyed this episode. And I cannot wait to see you next time. Be well.
If you want to share your experience, write a comment or contact us on Instagram at RelationFixPod or email us at RelationFixPodcast@gmail.com and tell us about it. All this information will be available in the show notes as well. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review, subscribe, and share it with your loved ones.